like to welcome Kate as our speaker. Many of you will recognise Kate from church. Certainly when she and Mark arrived, I think it's noticed a number of things you volunteered for, including the BCC, but no purple lanyard tonight. That's an awesome. So it's no surprise really when our main speaker couldn't make it, that Kate volunteered to step in, doing her volunteering piece, and I look forward to this evening's presentation.
That's lovely. Thank you very much. So, Kate Tucker, I'm a Marine Champion. That is a voluntary role, so I'm not actually employed by the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust. I'm a volunteer for them. Thoroughly enjoying it. I've not lived by the coast in this country. I have in New Zealand, but not here. And thoroughly enjoying it. I'm not a marine biologist, just in case anybody has any complicated questions. The marine biologist is the gorgeous Emily. I have questionnaires from Emily, should you wish to answer one, Christmas cards, and some other little bits of information from her. As we were sitting down to dinner tonight, I thought, my goodness, it's amazing what a woman has to do these days to sit down and have a curry with her husband. But I'm glad to be here. As the front page says, the Secrets of the Solent project is a four-year project, is funded by the National Lottery and the National Heritage Lottery and a few major donors as well. The idea of the project is to make people aware of what is actually in the Solent. The Solent has huge biodiversity. It's actually an amazing habitat, and people are not aware of it. Conservation in the Solent is urgent. It's very important. But if people don't know it's there, they don't know it needs looking after. If you don't know it's there, you don't care about it. And so if I just move along, Sir David Attenborough always says it so incredibly well. If you want to achieve conservation, the first thing you have to do is persuade people that the natural world is precious, beautiful, worth saving and complex. If people don't understand that and don't believe that in their hearts, conservation doesn't stand a chance. This is the first step, and that's what I do. That's what we do as Marine Champions as well. So with that in mind, I'm going to tell you a little bit about some of the creatures that are out there, tell you a little bit about what's available through Secrets of the Solent, and introduce you to some things that you could get involved in if you so wish. So have any of you encountered these little creatures on the foreshore? Anybody know who they are? They're our little friend, the barnacle. Now, they're an arthropod. They're very common on the shores. They're stuck on everything you could leave on the shore. They're amazing little things. They have glands in their heads that produce cement, which basically allows them to glue themselves to what they decide is home. And that's it. They are. If anyone's ever cleaned the bottom of a boat, you'll know exactly how difficult they are to get rid of. They live in the intertidal shore area. That's a really extreme environment. If there's something that can be thrown at you by the coastal regions, this is it. You've got desiccation. You've got UV radiation. You've changes in salinity, temperature, water level. You've predators, pollution, wave action. Basically, if you can hack it on the intertidal shore like these little creatures, you're a real toughie. Not surprisingly, Charles Darwin actually spent 8 years studying barnacles, which might sound a bit nerdy, but he studied these as he approached writing The Origin of Species, and he actually developed some of his ideas of natural selection, studying the anatomical variation of the barnacle. So whilst barnacles may not sound like the most exciting creature, Obviously, they've helped Charles Darwin quite well. People locally and at the Wildlife Trust do love to say, oh, Darwin visited the Isle of Wight 3 times. So, you know, it's lovely to have had somebody who became so famous. Cirripedia is Latin, Cirri meaning curved, pedia foot. That is how a barnacle actually feeds. And since the middle of the 20th century, the Solent has actually been the hotspot for barnacle biologists. Who'd have thought that, eh? If you're into Latin names, Semibalanus balanoides. These little chaps spend their life going through 6 larval stages. They've only got 1 adult stage. But if you look at how wonderfully complex they are, you can see that actually, you know, it takes a while to develop into that. You've this lovely calcified sheets that make up your protection. And as you know, they're pretty darn difficult to get off a surface once they've decided to fix themselves on. Lifestyle is something we talk about a lot these days. These little chaps are what's called a cross-fertilising hermaphrodite, which basically means they're all both sexes. They don't self-fertilise, but they can all breed with each other, which probably makes it a little bit easier to produce a population. It's thought that they can live up to 8 years, so once you've got them on your boat, they could be with you for a while. And a slightly naughty detail is that they have the biggest penis to body size ratio in the animal kingdom. So if you told you hung by, like a barnacle, I'd be very proud. They feed on zooplankton and use those little cirri to get out and pull it into them. Anybody know who this little chap is? It is the common crab, the greenshore crab. Grows to about 3.5 inches across the main carapace. Feeds on mollusks, worms, little crustaceans. Has a bit of, because of what it feeds on, it does actually have a bit of an impact on fisheries. Extremely common. You see them from tiny little things up to quite a decent size on the shore. The Canadians have come up with a very good ploy. They are basically trying to encourage people to eat them. They are listed as a member of the 100 top invasive species. So they are something that we need to contain and control a little bit. And you will find out as I go through this presentation that the suggestions of eating several of the little characters we come across is becoming quite commonplace and part of the marine champion activities later in the year when seafood is common is going to be promoting various different recipes at different fairs to try to control these little creatures in a, I suppose what you might call a more natural way. We've all got to eat at the end of the day. If you want to know whether it's a boy or a girl, the boys have a little pointed tail, females have a little tail that curves under because they're the ones that have to carry the eggs, so they need a little cavity to carry their eggs. If you're a girl, common green crab, actually you have a wonderful life. Chap comes along, takes a fancy to you, mates with you, helps to feed you, protects you when you molt, looks after you and the children so that the children can grow up. When you molt, she's really not interested. It's quite a hard life being a male crab, I think. Anybody know what this little character is? It's a limpet. This particular one's called a patella limpet. I'm just hoping, patella kneecap, I'm hoping nobody has a kneecap this shape in the room, otherwise it might not be that easy. It's shaped like that to break up the waves so that it doesn't get washed off the surface that it's decided to house itself on. It's believed that these little creatures actually live for 20 years, so pollution being an issue on the coast affects these colonies quite badly. This style of limpet has 1,920 teeth, which is a heck of a lot of teeth. They're not all eating teeth, they actually have different sort of roles to play. It's got 100 rows of teeth. Some of them it uses to gouge out the rock underneath it, and it makes a beautiful little scar on the rock that it fits absolutely perfectly. That allows it to stick onto the rock. It helps it protect itself from predators. It means that what's under the shell actually stays moist, which this is basically a type of sea snail. It's not the normal shape of snail we used to, but it is a sea snail. No snail likes to dry out. Again, this lives in the intertidal area. When the tide's in, it moves around eating. As the tide withdraws and it becomes vulnerable to predators and drying out, it whips back to that scar that it's dug on the rock, fastens itself down, and it's a perfect fit. That tends to protect it then from predators drying out the waves, and that keeps it going. It may not look like it, but we're used to snails with the two little antenna. This does actually have a couple of optic nerves. It has some little, what are called eye spots, so it can actually tell the difference between dark and light. Out of all those teeth that it's got, they are iron mineralised teeth, and apparently this is one of the strongest substances known to man. There's been quite a lot of research on it. When they're doing things like their rock carving, they degrade their teeth. The teeth wear out and they replace them within 12 to 48 hours. Researchers at the University of Portsmouth have actually examined the mechanics of this limpet's teeth right down to the atom. So they're the ones that are telling us that this structure is so hard we could possibly make cars, boats, aircraft out of it in the future. So watch the news and you never know, you might hear something. This is another limpet. This little one's known as the slipper limpet, so completely different from the patella. Its Latin name is Crepidula fornicata, and it does like breeding. They breed extremely well. In Britain, they don't actually have a natural predator. They're yet another invasive species. It seems that almost anything that hitches a ride on a boat and comes to British waters does very well. We have Pacific oysters here. They first came on the bottom of boats and they outperform the natural oysters quite well. Again, we've got a few solutions with these ones, with the large populations. Eat them. I'm told that when you cook them, they produce an awful lot of fluid, which apparently can be used as a stock. So, you know, you could go and collect a few from the shore and have a go yourself. There are slipper limpet recipes in a Scottish cookbook, but you would find them as a delicacy in the Azores as well. The Spanish also eat them. And, yes, they're considered now a niche seafood. What we're going to be seeing as the years go by is an awful lot more marketing of now what is considered native seafood. If we're going to control populations sensibly and keep a good ecosystem, there is going to be a lot more encouragement to be eating what is in the Solent. So the seafood industry is going to be promoting a lot of these to you in the not too distant future. This little one is what's called a sequential hermaphrodite. They like to live in chains, and the biggest limpet at the bottom of the chain is a female. All the others are males, and they're sort of, they're almost like ladies in waiting. The male limpets higher up can send down a tube and fertilise the female. If the female at the bottom of the chain dies, the next male in the chain becomes a female, and the whole story starts again. If you're a baby slipper limpet, you've got to go and find somewhere to live. You've been produced, you have to go and find somewhere to live. You can either join your natural sac and just spend your time as a boy until you work your way down the chain, or if you go off and decide to start your own colony, you've started life as a boy, you find your new home, fix onto it, you become a girl, you send out some chemical signals that say, hey chaps, come and join me, and start your own little colony. Anybody recognise this little friend? This is one of these sea anemones. And I've been on a couple of intertidal surveys where you go out when the tide's out and you actually make notes of which species you see, how many, so that it helps us actually work out what's where. I've done one over at Leap, one at Hillhead, totally different species, different numbers. And it's absolutely fabulous seeing sea anemones because we tend to assume that they're not on our shores, they're elsewhere. You don't have to go overseas, they're here in the Solent, which is absolutely fantastic. They have symbiotic algae, which actually gives the colouring. So they're greenish with little purple tips on this particular one. If you find them in deeper water, because there isn't so much light, unfortunately, they tend to be a bit boring. They're a little bit grey. But I found one of these and a couple of other ones on the shore here at Leap and at Hillhead. And it's just lovely to see them. They're often quite tiny. They grow glow green in the dark because they've got a fluorescent protein. Again, this is another one to eat. In Spain, apparently, they marinate these in vinegar, dip them in something like a tempura batter and deep fry them. And they're supposed to taste like a croquette, but with a seafood flavour to it. So, haven't tried anything yet. You'll also find them on the menu in Andalusia and in Sardinia. The tentacles on these ones sting. If you just poke them with your finger, hello. Oops, gone on one. If you poke a sea anemone with your finger, you're unlikely to get stung. If anything, it'll feel a little bit slippery. But if you have the misfortune of grazing abdominal skin on one of these, you're likely to get a rash that'll last for a month, and it's reputed to be worse than a jellyfish sting. So admire them on the foreshore, but just don't get too close. Was anybody aware that we have cuttlefish in the Solent? I think some of you have seen them. It's a mollusk and, of course, has the internal shell that's the cuttle bone. Most of us are aware of those used as calcium in bird cages. The cuttle bone has lots of little gas-filled chambers, so it's very lightweight. It's like a buoyancy aid for the cuttlefish. They live in relatively shallow water, and if they were to get to a depth of about 200 metres, they're likely to implode because of the gas in the cuttle bone. So, you know, you wouldn't have to go very deep if you wanted to see some of these creatures. They have a lovely, you can just see it here, a W-shaped pupil. They've got eight arms and two tentacles with the suckers, and that's how they capture their prey. They grow to approximately 15 to 25 centimetres here in the cold waters, so 6 to 10 inches. And I think if you've walked on the beach, you've probably seen loads of bits of cuttlefish bone anyway. The first beach clean I did, I actually kept thinking it was polystyrene, then realised what it was. They again eat small mollusks. They like crabs, shrimp, octopus, worms. They'll eat other cuttlefish as well. So they are also predated on by sharks, fish, seals, seabirds, other cuttlefish. They have an incredibly short life cycle, 1 to 2 years, which when you consider how long something like the limpets lasts, it seems a little bit unfair that something so beautiful has such a short lifespan, but of course that's why you find so much of the cuttlefish bone on the coast. The cuttlefish is considered one of the most intelligent invertebrates. It's actually got one of the largest brain to body size ratios of all invertebrates. And something you may not have been aware of, the cuttlefish bone has been used traditionally by jewellers for moulds. So they would push a mould into the a casting into the bone and then pour in precious metals. And that was, I suppose, a fairly cheap way of actually having a material that was going to give you a very nice casting. We used to squid ink. I don't know whether any of you have eaten the pasta dyed with squid ink. You do get black pasta, and it's used to dye a few food substances. Cuttlefish ink is sepia, which of course used to be used in photography. It's really not used very much nowadays. Synthetic dyes have replaced that, but it is something that they produce. Cuttlefish can't actually see colour. I think a lot of people are aware that they change colour and they can do all sorts of clever things with colour. They have three types of chromatophore. So they've got the red, brown, yellow, and I don't remember what the other one was now. Browny black. They can sense tone. So whilst they don't actually sense colour, they can sense tone. They can therefore alter their colour, contracting muscles to be frightening, to attract a mate, to tone in so that they're invisible and are protected from predators. Female cuttlefish use a tone of grey when they're called pre-copulatory grey, when they're ready for mating. So that's how the males can recognise that they have a receptive female. As in many animals, it's usually the big males that are the most impressive. All males in the animal world parade somewhere in front of the females. Little male cuttlefish are quite cunning. A cuttlefish can be different colours on different sides. So a male cuttlefish can, a small male cuttlefish can present one side to the female saying, I'm a chap, take some interest in me. The other side he can show to males who are swimming near the female a colour that females turn when they've already mated, so they're showing, I'm not interested. So males have a look and think, oh, that's a female that's not interested, whereas he's saying, oh, girls, have a look at me from the other side. We don't eat cuttlefish in this country, but they are potted for in Europe. Some of you may recognise the cuttlefish egg sacs here. Again, it's another thing that you find washed up on the beach. And egg sacs actually are evidence of different species. One of the marine surveys is actually to identify the different egg sacs that you can find on the beach. And you can actually report those online so that we can actually work out what's still breeding around and about. There are two types of seahorse in the Solent. I have to say it was the seahorses that really seal the deal for me becoming a Marine champion. We've the short nose and we've the spiny seahorse. They are actually fish. They're not quite the same, obviously, as a lot of the fish we know. They've got a plated exoskeleton, so they're not scaled like a fish. They don't have as many fins as a fish, and they have a prehensile tail because the little fins that they've got have to work really hard to keep them upright. The tail then makes sure that they don't go floating off where they don't want to be. They've got amazing eyes. Their eyes move completely independently, so they can be looking backwards and forwards at the same time, which, if trying not to get eaten by something else, is actually really handy. Seahorses in Britain are generally found down the west coast, from Scotland, down the west coast, all around Ireland, and across the south coast, just slightly past us. Some have been spotted in Kent, but you don't really find them up the east coast. They don't have them quite so much in Europe. The main challenge for the seahorse is the seagrass beds. In Devon and Cornwall, there's a lot more knowledge about what's in the sea. Conservation, apparently, in Devon and Cornwall is a little easier. In Hampshire, wonderful place for boating, there's less knowledge that there are seagrass beds all through the Solent. We need joined up seagrass beds. A female seahorse will have a 100 square metre territory. That's quite large. The males only get half a metre, which isn't very much. But if you're going to meet a member of the opposite sex and produce a family, you've actually got to have joined up territories, because otherwise you're never going to meet. Unfortunately, weighing anchor a lot is tearing up the seagrass beds. So we're getting little fragments of seagrass, which is making it an awful lot more difficult for the seahorses. Little seahorses produce between 50 and 150 fry. Bigger breeds up to 1,500. One in 1,000 seahorses survives to adulthood. So it's extremely tough being a seahorse, and the fact that we've got them there in the Solent, I think, is wonderful, but they are really in serious danger, and making people aware that they're there and what sort of environment they need to exist is awfully important. They feed up the little snout, and they can't chew, so they have to sniff stuff up the snout and then disintegrate it. If what they sniff up is larger than the snout, it just expands to take up the food. So I should imagine a seahorse with a large meal on the way probably looks a little bit strange. Male seahorses are the ones that bear the pregnancy. The female delivers her eggs to the male. He pops them in his pouch. He fertilises them and carries them. And then he actually gives birth to them. So it's quite a busy time being a male seahorse. Female goes swanning off around her 100 square metres of territory, and this poor little chap's just got his 50 metres. Once he's given birth to the little ones, that's it, they're on their own. They're out in the plankton for up to 3 weeks, and as I said, only one in 1,000 actually manages to make it to adulthood. So if we're already losing the habitat, you can understand that it's awfully important to be aware that they're there and actually protect the habitat, because otherwise we will eventually lose them. I've shown you some of the perhaps more bizarre or interesting creatures that we've got there in the Solent. The grey sea slug and the hermit crab are two that I got photographs of at Leap when we did the intertidal survey. These are our native oysters. Again, you find loads of those shells on the beach. But they are being outcompeted by the Pacific oyster that has the much more, perhaps, interesting shell, the multi-layer shell. We've huge numbers of different critters out there. There are whelks, starfish. If you're interested in plants, the number of seaweeds is amazing. We've got periwinkles of all sorts, little black ones, little light-coloured ones. Tube worms, which are amazing. The tube almost feels like it's rubber, the little malleable thing. And they almost look like an anemone. You get this little, what looks like a little feathery plant coming out of the top. If you brush that, of course, it shoots down into the tube. Top shells, which again is another little curly-shelled sea creature. If you go further out in the waters here, get a little bit deeper, we actually have thresher sharks. I think everyone's aware that there are seals out there. The seal population in this area is increasing, which unfortunately is not great for a lot of these creatures. They're quite happy to eat a lot of these, so again, they're predating the very things that we're trying to preserve. And of course, we've got dolphins. I think some of you have been out in boats any depth. Again, will have seen them. So, can I get involved with Secrets of the Solent? It's a four-year project. We're towards the end of the first 18 months now. Yes, you can. I'm a marine champion. We do many things. These are beach cleans. Mark and I went on one right in the heat of the summer, last July in Hayling Island. But it's very important. This is part of our marine environment. We do need to keep it clean and tidy, and particularly plastics free. There are different ways people can become marine champions. Inspiring people, that's giving talks, so this is what I'm doing with you this evening. Ferry safaris, if you like whipping back and forth to the Isle of Wight, you could be on a ferry with information and boards and whatnot, informing people crossing on the ferries about what's here in the Solent. Great Solent Seafood Marine Champion. The seafood festivals will be coming up later in the year, around about August. I'm hoping to get involved with those, but if you're going to any of the coastal sort of fairs over the summer, there's going to be a lot more involvement there. Intertidal surveys, as I've mentioned, these are the ones where we go and identify creatures and measure them. It's quite nice to spend an afternoon or early evening on a lot of the beaches locally. All you're doing is noting. One of our little surveys. We put coloured buckets out so you note I'm in the green zone and I've seen these creatures, and I'm in the yellow zone and I've seen those. So it's a nice way for us to actually get an idea what's out there, what sort of numbers it's in. Marine ambassadors are people who are still in the corporate sector. So if you're able to introduce your company to a bit of sponsorship, able to do talks to the staff, things like that. That's what a marine ambassador would do. This is Sam. I met Sam on the first training course I went to. He and I went to the intertidal surveys training, and then our first survey at the beach at Leap. And Sam is a first year marine biology student at Portsmouth. We've been told about something called the Asian date mussel. We couldn't believe it. Sam actually found one. They were incredibly rare. They were first spotted here in 2017 over at Western Shore. We found it, well, he found this one at Leap. So we already know that this little character is spreading. As you can see, it's not a particularly big one. But again, it could end up challenging our own mussels. So we need to be aware of how far it's spreading. There are some citizen science projects on the go. So this is people learning about the environment through a range of scientific opportunities, helping to increase the knowledge of what's out there and collecting data for research. So as you can see, again, having a look at what's out there. as the tide comes in. We're also expecting some art installations this year. One of the projects is to actually go out and collect as much rubbish from the beach as you can, and then try to make some sort of marine industry related collage from what you found. Obviously, there's an awful lot of plastic out there of every shape and size and colour. So there's plenty of material. And some of you may have noticed, if you go into Portsmouth, on one of the Portsmouth City Museum walls, that there was a massive cuttlefish painting. That's painted by a wildlife artist called ATN, and he normally does birds. He agreed last in 2017 to paint this massive cuttlefish on the outside of one of the buildings. So if you go into Portsmouth, you may spot that. It's absolutely huge. The data that the Citizen Science Project pulls in actually helps to change conservation policy. So if you did want to get involved with something like that, you're actually making a very valuable contribution. There's Crab Watch, again, to try to assess what sort of which crabs, what sort of populations we've got. The Great Egg Case Hunt, again, ray cases, shark cases, cuttlefish cases, again, counting what you've got where and reporting it online. Marine Mammal Survey, again, helps with management. The big seaweed search. We have a wonderful diversity of seaweeds out there. A huge number of the seaweeds in the UK are edible. Some communities in places like Lincolnshire and up in Scotland tend to be fairly fond of eating seaweed. It's not quite so common on the menu, but quite honestly, there's an awful lot out there that we could all be eating and benefiting from without causing any problems. So if you'd like to learn more about Secrets of the Solent, you can go online. I've got a little survey from the Wildlife Trust if anybody wants to complete that, so that they get a bit more of a feel for what kind of awareness people out there have for what's available. You could become a member of the Wildlife Trust, or you could report a sighting. So it's very much up to you. You know, there's some interesting things you could get involved with if you'd like to. So, any questions?
Okay, not thinking about soap, but we hear all about plastics in the sea.
Yes.
How does it get there? Because there seems to be enormous islands floating about. And, you know, it's not all falling off ships, right?
No, it's not. An awful lot is coming from small island nations where mostly Western companies have been very happy to promote bottled drinks, bottled products, obviously plastic bottled milk for the nations that drink milk. We haven't done anything about helping them recycle or dispose of that. So it gets generally thrown into dumps. There's not a lot of education on the fact that plastic doesn't biodegrade. So people are quite happy to chuck it in the river, chuck it in the harbour. And that's, unfortunately, a lot of the plastic that we are marketing to them is ending up in the sea. It's not, they don't have any way of dealing with it. They don't incinerate it, they don't recycle it. So, you know, the big corporates actually have a lot of responsibility there and ought to be getting a lot more involved in dealing with that, because you know, we've heard on the news recently about some of these incredibly deep sea dives down the Mariana Trench. They're finding plastic down there, which is awfully sad, because we are polluting the depths of the oceans. We shouldn't be interfering there. You know, there shouldn't be any knowledge down there that we exist, and yet, sadly, because we haven't been responsible about it, that's where a lot of it's coming from. So until we start building the recycling plants, I don't really know how solvable that is. But it's amazing. The stuff that washes up on the beaches here kind of come from all sorts of places. Some of it's dropped on the beaches here. Sometimes you pick up an awful lot of fishing gear. Mark and I ended up picking up huge numbers of wet wipes on Studland Beach last summer. They were all very clean, so we can only presume that they've washed out to sea and then washed back into the beach. But, you know, that is very sad. We shouldn't be doing this. But our reliance on plastics and synthetics that don't biodegrade is causing a huge amount of trouble. And I think as we've seen so much very recently, we really are at crisis point. And, you know, we're reaping what we've sown over probably the last 100 years or so. It's terribly sad. The biodiversity can disappear quite quickly. We're part of that biodiversity. Species are disappearing. If we're not careful, we are going to be one of the species that disappears. And, you know, I think most of us would agree it's really something we want to happen. So if you are interested, I've business cards for Emily. I've little cards to take away. And I've Secrets of the Solent survey, if any of you want to complete that and give it back to me. But thank you very much for your attention this evening.
Do you have any more questions for Kate?
Just quickly, do tours around the shore. Yeah, because obviously I wouldn't know what I'm looking at if I went around the shore.
Yes, no, what we do, Emily, the marine biologist, leads a lot of the intertidal surveys, so we have ID booklets on things. They're laminated with a ring, so you flip through very quickly. What is this seaweed? What is the shell thing? We have usually about four people who are very knowledgeable in each survey about what something is, so they can come and tell you. They can also point stuff out. So if there's a sea squirt there, I've seen my first sea squirt this summer. I didn't know we had those on our beaches. You know, they're about that big, a lot of them. There are sponges on the beaches here. So when the tide goes out, I think that most of us would think, oh, well, it's a few stones and sort of bare sand. No, it's not actually, there's an awful lot out there. Sometimes it sees us or feels us coming and disappears pretty quick. But no, if you wanted to come along, go onto the website, sign up for one, because they need to get a feel for the numbers. I'll be helping lead one at Hillhead Sunday evening. But, you know, if you just want to come along and have a go at an intertidal survey to think, oh, I've had a go at that. There's loads of stuff happening. It's on the website. As I say, I've got Emily's business cards. If you wanted to ring and have a chat with Emily, there are lots of different things you can pop along to. There are loads of events happening over the summer. You can just pop in. You'll see the pop-up signs and everything. A number of different members of the staff.
Do you think of being in the schools? Doing anything with the schools?
Well, some of the marine champions are starting to do things with the schools. The children are getting involved in a lot of the art projects. So when I mentioned, you know, pulling stuff off the beach and whatnot, we're getting children involved in a lot of that. So they gather knowledge as they're producing that. And, of course, each artwork is themed. So it might be about loss of habitat or conservation or ecosystems or variety of species.
Thank you again.
You're very welcome. Thank you.